Jesus, as you know, I'm a martial artist, and one of the things you do is you get more advanced in fighting, you stage the fight. You don't just react to the opponent, you stage the fight. Like if in a knife fight, I might block like this, well, so the opponent would probably strike at the one open spot, you know, so you kind of know where the attack's going to go to. And so you set your opponent up. And isn't that what Jesus did on the cross? He said, come at me, brah, you know. And Satan took his one weapon. What is his weapon? It's death. And Jesus killed death. He destroyed death. He took captivity capture. And death has no sting. So I need a volunteer to come up here and have a knife fight with me. No, Stan, I already got one, Stanley. Thanks. I need someone who is willing to be thrown across the room. How about Damon? Is Damon in the house? No, the other Damon. The other Damon. No, I'm just kidding. So let's see. I need to get a pen or something to pretend it's a knife. Here's a pen right here. Okay, so knife fighting is a lot of fun because you know pretty much, I'll have you stand here. You know pretty much where the attack's coming from. If someone has a knife, what are they going to attack you with? Probably the knife. So you know it's probably not that. It's not that. It's not this or this. It's probably going to come from here. So already, Jesus knows, you know, the attack's going to come from Satan. It's going to be to try to kill him. And so the other thing you do is you try to stage it. So I'm not going to get really elaborate, but I need to ask you to, if I was standing like this, where would you probably try to hit me with a knife? Like right here. I'm kind of blocked there, aren't I?
Yeah. So
you wouldn't want to kill me, would you? I mean, it's there. Yeah. Help me out, dude. There's the opening. Okay, so you're stabbing. So a slash would come here, right? Yeah. So if you want to do a stab, okay, so there. No, that's right. If you want to do a slash, you would go there. But if you want to do a stab, I could draw you in by opening up like this. Where would I be? So you know where you're going to probably hit me here, yeah. Right? So let's do that. Okay. So now I need to have you do a favor for me. You need to use intent, but not speed. Mm-hmm. And you'll feel your energy want to do stuff and just let it do that.
All right.
And you're not going to get hurt or anything. Or I hope I'm not going to get hurt or anything. But okay, so back a little bit more. Okay, so I'll just give you that target. You can take it. Now I'm going to take that. With his intent, he's stabbing forward, so I'm using his energy to bring him here. I also have you in an arm bar here, right? But now you've given me your weapon, so now I'll slash your throat, relax, and I'll throw you into a wrist. Go down. Go where you want to go. Go down. No, don't fight me or I would have to hurt you. Just go where you want to go. Go down.
I can't go anywhere.
You can't fall?
Oh,
yeah, fall. Go ahead and fall. Okay, so because you want to go down, right? Or I would have broke your wrist. And then if I don't like you in that position, I can rotate your arm and break your arm here and then roll you over. But you're not really, you're not expecting me to break your arm, are you? Okay, so I'll get you up. Okay, so basically, what did I do? I staged the fight and let you come at me, and then I used your weapon to kill you. You know, I slashed your throat and then laid you gently to the ground. So, thanks, Damon.
Yeah, here's the pen.
But did your wrist hurt?
No.
Okay, so, yeah, I was hoping he wouldn't resist quite so much. But you get the idea, right? Jesus staged that fight. Jesus is a champion. And he destroyed death. And he took captivity capture. He's our champion. I have a good friend who was the pastor for the Miami Hurricanes, I guess, the football team, and the basketball team, and the baseball team. And they were all winning national championships. His name is Gerard. He's a champion stand-up paddle surfer, the one who brought stand-up paddling to the East Coast. But he talks about his championship diet. If you're going to be a champion, there's some people, he says, I just won't be around them. They're not on my championship diet. Or if there's some TV that's on, he'll say, I don't watch that. It's not on my championship diet. So people that are champions, you know, we watch, we have our diet. We also do resistance training, right? That's how you get strong. Is when things get bad in your life, young men, and they will, because that's the way life is meant, it is. facing that resistance and pushing back is how you get strong. Like, I tore my bicep loose about 5 months ago and had to have it reattached. It's so amazing how there was no muscle here after a few months of not being able to use it, and this one was still relatively strong. But how through just a little bit of resistance training, that muscle's coming back now. You get strong by resistance training. You need endurance. I know, like, when I pedaled my bicycle across the United States, or pedaled the Molokai Channel, one of the most treacherous channels in the world, it's about 30 miles. That's endurance. It's cardio. It's not strength as much as it is cardio. So you need to have endurance in your life. You need to be able to not just wait for adversity to come to you, but go after adversity. Find something that's harder for you to do that you cannot accomplish unless you grow as a person in virtue or in, you know. So a great way to develop virtue is to take on a physical challenge, because it draws out in you. And Mark, this hasn't started yet. Okay, so it draws out in you to be virtuous. When I pedaled my bicycle across the United States, that wasn't a physical thing at all. Believe me, that was all mental and the act of will, right? So a champion also learns flexibility training. I mean, I would train about 6 hours a week in flexibility training when I was winning my world titles in surfing, but I know Michael's a martial artist too, and I'm not a flexible person. But you have to train in flexibility training when you're a martial artist, right? So you need, as a champion, needs to be, you know, how many people do you see a great football player playing and then he got a cramp? You know, that comes from probably not somewhat from diet, maybe not having enough potassium, but it may not be that he did his flexibility training. So a champion needs to be flexible. He needs to be eating the right things. You know, like, what are you reading? Are you spending time in scripture? A champion has resistance training, endurance. A champion is flexible. A champion also knows how to rest. One of the main things you'll see of an elite athlete is they get a lot of sleep. You know, I have my Fitbit watch on. I get my steps in, but I also really have a goal of how much rest I'll get, because that's when things are restored. When you're getting stronger, young men, if you're lifting weights, you don't get strong by lifting weights. If you lifted weights every day, if you did curls every day, you wouldn't get much stronger. But if you do curls and to the point of fatigue, and you did that every other day or every third day, you would get strong, because when you're doing resistance training, your muscle breaks down and it takes rest for it to build that back up. And when it's building that back up, that's when the cell structure gets stronger. So we need to be champions like Jesus is our champion, and you grow in that through the virtues. And you do that by saying no a lot. You have to narrow your focus and say, this is what I'm going to do. You know, like I said, I said no to certain parties. I said yes to working two jobs. You know, I said no to that extra hour of sleep so I could get up and do my college work. So it's saying no to the right things and saying yes to the right things. And so the question I have when I first talked about surfing is a detachment. What is clinging to you? Or better said, what are you clinging to? Anything you're clinging to other than God is your God. What are you clinging to? Gaming, you know, till 2 in the morning? I mean, I even know some grandparents that are like too doting on their grandchildren. You know, it's like they almost become too much, you know. So what is the thing in your life that is the most important? And you have to question that. And if it's not God, then that is your God. God has to be number one. So I'm going to ask you, what measly, silly affections, vanities, agendas, power grabs, things and people are you clinging to? What is stopping you from total abandonment to the wild adventure God has for you? Because you're missing out. Why are you running with a herd? So it's Jeff, right? So Jeff, you ran with the bulls in Pamplona how many times? That's really stupid. Did you do it 2 different years, but 1 year you ran twice with them? Yeah. So he and I both had that experience of, What's the most dangerous part of running with the bulls? Yeah. You think so? That's the dangerous part. No, but the herd of people is what will kill you. And on the first time I ran with the bulls, there were 32 ambulances. It was the most, and I think a couple of deaths. It was the most gnarly running of the bulls in history. But when I got there the first time, I didn't have anybody to run with me. I had done it before. We surf in Biarritz and come over the Pyrenees down to the Pamplona. So by 7 in the morning, we're in Pamplona. I think 8:30 or something it runs. And then everyone said they're going to run with me, didn't come. So I'm going over there by myself. And I said, I'm going to look for the guy wearing Nikes because he's taking this seriously. Everybody else drank all night, you know. And the roads are slippery because everybody's vomiting and everything all night from drinking too much. So they hose it down, right? And there's no way you can escape. You can't jump out of the street because people are on these little corral things that they put in, and they're eyeball to eyeball with you. There's no place to run and hide. You got to run. So I found this guy, and he goes, I go, so what's this all about? He goes, well, I run all the time. I run every year, everyone. And I go, well, so what's the key? He says, well, stay away from the other people. It's not the bulls that'll kill you. It's the stampeding herd of people that'll kill you. He said, just wait till you see the bulls, though. Don't start running like everybody else is. Wait till you see the bulls, because then you're just running with people. So the first six bulls get run, the big ones, the brown and white ones with the cowbells, get let loose. And then after that, the really mean ones that are going to be killed in the ring that night are let loose. And he said, so wait till you see the bulls, and then we'll run. And then when I run, you run. So I'll tell you when to run. So I'm waiting. I'm scared to death. And then all of a sudden, I see the bulls, and I'm waiting. And then I look, and he's gone. He had already left. So I ran with the bulls, but the thing he said, and everyone that warned me before I went over from Biarritz was, it's the people. Be careful you don't get run over by the people. And I think that's a lesson, especially for you young men. Don't run with the herd, dudes. Don't run with the herd. You gotta draw your own line. One of the things that happens with Pamplona is you start out by running up a hill and then down, and then it turns, right? And it's at that turn where all the cameras are. When you make that turn, it's slanted this way, and it's a cobblestone street and slippery. So if you run too wide, you're going to run into that corral, and that's where the bulls slip and slide, and you can see where they crush people against that corral. You got to take the high line. Everybody else is running as fast as they can and taking it wide. You got to slow yourself down enough to go up high and turn that sharp corner as you're going down. So don't run. You don't take the path everybody else is taking. That's not what Christians do. You know, we're meant to swim upstream, not downstream. And you got to make decisions. Are you going to be a champion or not? And the way you become a champion is you become, you know, I'm a couple-time world champion, but I've also trained world champions. It's every decision, every little decision that accumulates to that. So you got to step away from the crowd. I love this saying. I've heard this saying. Are you the type of man who, when your feet hit the ground in the morning, the devil says, oh no, he's up? That's who you want to be. You want to be a terror of demons, right? In your family, you're the head of that household. You want to be the terror of demons in that household. You know, this is Portland, right? The Portland area. So this is the Jesus that... No offense to the men in the room, but you know what I'm talking about. If Jesus were here, if he was in Portland, he'd probably be at Starbucks, right? And he'd be ordering a cafe latte, don't you think? Like, just above lukewarm, not too hot, not too cold. And he'd probably be doing a poetry reading. And Stanley, what do you think the name of it is? What do you think the poem is that he's reading? It's, Why Can't We All Just Get Along? That's the name of his poem. We all know that Jesus is meek and mild, and oh, and he's politically correct too. And he teaches tolerance and niceness. I hate it when someone comes up and says, this is Barry, he's a real nice guy. No, I'm not. I'm not nice. Maybe I'm a good man, I hope to be, but I don't want to be nice. I want to be a good man. Sometimes Christian. I'm a Christian, but I'm not that good of a Christian. I think there's some game show host says that. Sometimes I might actually cuss accidentally, you know. I mean, I'm not a nice guy. I'm a good man. There's a big difference. I'm not that Simpsons, the neighbor on the Simpsons, the Christian next door. That's not what God's ideal is for you young men to be. You want to be a man. You want to be manly. You want to be a good man. That means you stand for something, but you don't push people around. You lead them by example. But Jesus is nice. He's nice. He's passive and he's woke. He would say, if he was here in Portland, not here, but up in Portland, he would say, we need to soften our tone and get with the times, and we need to lighten up a little bit on our moral teaching. Dialogue. Yeah, you got to dialogue. We got to reimagine it, dude. He would say, you know, you don't really need to share your faith. That's a private matter anyway. And he would say, it's okay to believe whatever you want to about me or whatever you want to call God. And it's okay. You can say, you have your God, I have my God. We each can have our own God. Whatever you think God is, that's what God is for you. I'm not a religious person, but I'm spiritual. How often do you hear that? He'd say, it's okay. You don't have to be religious, just be spiritual. He would say, I'll be your Play-Doh. I'll be your silly putty. You can make me into any kind of God you want. That's really the mentality out there, right? But Jesus would really say, let's get something straight. I'm the potter, you're the clay. My name is I Am Who Am. I am existence and I am essence. No matter what you want to make me out to be, I am who I am. I'm not the sweet, comfortable God you may wish me to be so that you can put me away on a shelf someplace. I am God. I'm full of adventure, wild adventure. I created quasars, galaxies, black holes. And just so you don't get too soft and easy in your chair, check this out, dudes. My son Shane says this to me several years ago because I was upset with someone. And he goes, Dad, why are you so mad? That was like 500 million miles ago. I go, what? He goes, yeah, it was at least yesterday. Haven't we traveled 500 million miles since then? That's so far away, that event, from where it happened. Let it go. I thought he was going to say that was yesterday. No, he's like, the world's spinning, the galaxy's spinning, the world universe is expanding. That's our God. And here's the cool thing. You know we're all stardust, right? It took three generations of stars to make the chemicals that are in your body. The first furnace of the star burned the first chemicals on that chemical chart. And then they exploded, and when the star that came back together again, it formed the next set of chemicals on the chemical chart. And then that exploded, and that third generation made what you're made out of. That's called ontological, right? Fancy word. You're like an arrow shot across the universe 13, 12 billion years ago. God intended for you to be here now. God made you. And you're higher than, think about it. There's animals that have a soul, but they don't have a spiritual soul. There's plants. There's angels that are spiritual. We're the only thing that's heaven and earth combined. We're spiritual. We have a spiritual soul and an earthy body. You know, God made you with intent. And I say this, even if you were conceived when, he was an accident, or worse cases, in other tragic cases like a rape. If a person is conceived in that, it is still God who intentionally says, I will put a spiritual soul, a unique soul, a unique personhood to marry that body and that soul together. He says, I love you. I made you with relationship in mind. You know, it says the Lamb was slain before the foundations of the world. From the very beginning, he had intention to save you and to have a relationship with you. But you got to get real, because Jesus didn't say, I'm one of the ways, right? He said, I am. What's this young man right here in the gray shirt? What's your name? I love that kid. He's listening so close. Matthew, so God made you for a relationship with him. And he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one can come to the Father except by me. That makes him the biggest, baddest bouncer you'll ever meet. Anybody ever been kicked out of a bar? Anybody here? I've been kicked into one once by a member of a certain biker group. He said, you're not leaving. Threw me back in. But Jesus is that bouncer. No one can come to the Father but by him. And no one can come to him unless the Father draws them. But the Bible says that not God wished that not one man would perish, but that all would have everlasting life. But you got to play by the, you have to come God's way. And he couldn't have demonstrated more love than to give his son. The champion. The way to heaven is narrow, and there is a judgment day coming. And think about this. Well, first time I gave this little page here, the first time I wrote this, I flew into California near Yosemite where it was all on fire. And the title of my talk was, I have come to set a fire. But Jesus said, I have come to set a fire, and how I wish it was already ablaze. Do you suppose that I have come to bring peace? No, but a sword of division. Fathers from sons, mothers from daughters. Everybody, oh, we all have to have unity. But you can't have unity without truth. You can't have unity without love. Truth and love have to go hand in hand. Right, the psalm, righteousness and peace have kissed. Truth has sprung up from the earth. You can't have one without the other. Jesus has come to bring division. But he said, I'm not going to judge you, but the words I speak will judge you. If you don't accept my words, then you've already judged yourself. Matthew, where are you going? I won't pick on you anymore. Jesus comes with a fire and a sword to circumcise you. Do you know that you cannot go to heaven without being pierced by a sword? Not even Jesus could go to heaven without being pierced. Why? Because in the Garden of Eden, going back to the sword play I had with Damon earlier, and the flaming sword, you couldn't go into the Garden of Eden because what was guarding was a flaming sword. You can't go to heaven without being pierced by that sword. It's the sword of circumcision that circumcisions our heart. Mary didn't go without her heart being pierced, did she? Didn't the prophet say your heart will be pierced? You will be pierced. We hear stories of St. Teresa of Avila's heart, right? It actually had a pierce in her heart. We must let his love, the sword of the Spirit, pierce us and circumcise our hearts. He wields a flaming sword to circumcise your heart. There has to be a merismos, a division in your heart. Hebrews 4:12, the word of God is sharper than a two-edged sword. That's the kind of sharper than a pen, right? The backside of a pen. It's double-edged. It's doubly dangerous. It's talking about a knife fight. Able to divide between spirit and soul, the joints and the marrow, and search out the secret thoughts and intentions of the heart, opening us up to him with whom we have to do. So it's like, it's a fight, right? We got to grapple with God. In other words, we have to deal with this sword of Jesus sooner or later. The Bible tells us of a man who runs. You know the story of the guy? He's running from a bear. He's running. Oh, my gosh. He runs and runs. He finally gets in his house, slams the door. and then there's a hissing snake up above. You can't run from God. You can't run from your sins either. God is pursuing you. The Holy Spirit, I believe, is called the Hound of Heaven by some. So why not just turn and face Him? Seek His face. Do you know it's appointed unto man once to die? There ain't no reincarnation. It's appointed unto man once to die, once to live, once to die, and then the judgment. And Jesus is pursuing you with His sword, not to harm you, but to bring a surgical cut to your heart, to separate the salt and the pepper that we mingled together in our lives and to become a pure heart. Because you know what? People with pure heart get to actually see God. His sword is meant to bring healing, for the Scripture says the wound of a friend heals. So here's the thing. You know right now, some of us more than others at this moment, we're on the operating table. And you know what I'm talking about. There's hell in your life or difficulty in your life or challenges in your life, pain in your life, betrayal in your life, and it hurts. Don't get off the altar. Don't get off the surgeon's table. In this time of pain or challenge, I just went through 70 visits to the doctor in the last year because of prostate cancer. And now it's all gone. But that was a real surgical operating type situation with radiation or whatever. I had two massive infections that were just fighting against each other. And I stayed on the altar. I made sure I went and saw the doctor constantly. He thought it was fixed. If you're experiencing pain or challenge in your life, don't get off the table. Don't get off the altar. Let God do His work with you. Because if you crawl off, you're just going to have to go back eventually anyway. Let the surgeon, you know, do His work in you. It hurts. And you don't even have the strength to pray. So you ask your brothers to pray for you. You don't even have the grace to say, "Oh Lord, I give this up to You. I offer my pain and suffering up to You." You don't even have that. Just, you know, when you're in that dark night, I remember as a kid going to matinees, watching the Three Stooges, and you come out at 3:30 in the afternoon, and the sun was so bright, it hurt, and you were blinded. It was like dark outside more than it. You know what I mean? Like after you get a picture taken of you with a flash cube back in the day. When you're going through a dark time, you got to understand it's not dark at all. It's brighter than ever. The Lord is shining His love on you. It's like there's a story of the man who is petting a cat, and the pet cat's all bristling like this. And he hears the man tenderly saying to the cat, "Turn around." Because he's petting them against the grain of the fur. "Well, I'm going to keep petting you. You've got to turn around." Jesus is pursuing you with a sword, with a surgical sword. You know, think about Moses. Did Moses, they're not really a picture of a sword, but there is a flaming bush. I think we can put the flaming bush and the flaming sword together. He was, became a shepherd. He was Pharaoh's son or stepson and in charge of everything, and then he became a shepherd. He was, you know, high up in the court of Pharaoh. And then the sword came to him. I mean, the flaming sword, the bush spoke to him. He goes, "Hey, Moses, what you got in your hand?" "Oh, Lord, it's my shepherd's rod." "Oh, it's your shepherd's rod." "Yeah." "Throw it down." And there's a lot of times, like Michael's doing that right now. He trained in martial arts. He knows he has to lay it down for a season because he's recently converted and he wants Jesus to be the center of his life. And a lot of martial arts is good. A lot of it has kind of a mixture. So he's laid that down for a season. For a season, probably. "Throw it down, Moses." And what happened when he threw it to the ground? Do you guys remember? Wait. Matthew's going to tell us. Turned into a hissing snake. Right. And then what did God say to him? He said, "Pick it up." And not only that, He said, "Pick it up by its tail." So Moses probably said, dude, you maybe you're not from around here, but you don't pick up a snake by its tail, you know. It'll bite you. Certainly not a hissing snake, not a mad one. But it says that when he threw that rod down, I can hear Moses saying, hey, God, you know, that's my career there, dude. I'm a shepherd, and that's my identity. It's who I am. It's not what I do. It's who I am. And plus, it's my prestige in the community because I'm a pretty good shepherd. Throw it down, Moses. But then when he picked it up by the tail, it says that the rod of Moses became the rod of God. So if you're going through that time now of like, I can't take it anymore, Lord, just stay on the table, let God do the work, and throw it down. Lay it all down at the foot of the cross. Let the surgeon's sword of the cross do his work in you. Have hope. It's not going to last forever. I remember bicycling across the desert when I pedaled my bike across the U.S. and then from San Diego to about past El Paso, it was record-breaking heat. I mean, the rubber, the cement, the pavement would stick to the tires of my tires, so I'd have to stop in the 6 hours of the middle of the day and only ride early and ride late. But do you know, as soon as I started pedaling into that desert, I was actually on my way out the other side. So no matter where you are right now, you're already on your way out. Just stay the course. Let the Lord do the work that he's doing in you. Why is he doing such a work in you? I know what I have in store for you, plans for peace, not destruction, a future reserved for you full of hope. He's doing a great work because he's got a great mission for you. When you go to build I built a cabin once in Montana, a little hut, kind of little hunting, just not much of a cabin. And I didn't even build a foundation. I just put some cement blocks down and then connected the floor foundation to that. I didn't dig down and build a good foundation. But if in Hawaii now, they're doing some big skyscraper buildings. They dig a pretty deep foundation for those things. Why? Because it's going to be a great and a high building. If God's digging a deep, painful foundation, if he's down in the basement digging holes in your life, digging out all the crap in your life, it may be because he has a great building in mind. And he is a builder, right? Technon, he's a builder. And he's building you up and he's building the church up. So, but first you got to break it down, right? First you got to break it down. When people come to me, woman comes and wants to learn how to tandem surf, I first ask her, do you know how to surf? She goes, yeah. And I go, okay, I know this is going to be tough to teach her how to release her energy and flow with her partner and know how to be lifted and trust her partner in tandem surfing. You have to kind of break it down before you can build it up. It's like resistance training, Matthew. You got to, when your muscle gets torn and then it gets rebuilt. But we got to have the breaking down part so God can build us up. You know what I'm trying to say? So you're in a knife fight. What happens in the knife fight here? I was in danger until Damon and I closed distance. Right? In a knife fight, you have to close distance. The same thing is true, like if you're in a boxing match and you're losing, what does the loser do? Do you know, Damon? What is the boxer that's kind of getting messed up? He's getting beat up. What does he do? What does he do? Yeah, or he may cling to the other guy, right? If you're feeling a little bit pummeled right now, cling to Jesus. Close distance. You may not even get to be very spiritual about it. Just say, God, help me. I know you're here. Do what you want to do with me. He wants to get to the point where you throw down the shepherd's rod and say, I'm all yours. Because getting that stuff out of the way is where then you can receive all. You know, it's like when you think I'm this little timid little God of yours. I'm the potter. You're the clay. But what's the first thing you do with clay? You pound it a little bit, right? Maybe put a little bit of water or oil in there to soften it up like the Holy Spirit. But you see them, they go like that, go like this, and then they thrust it onto the wheel, and then they start spinning it. It's probably a little bit confusing when that happens. And then he puts the thumbs down, and it hurts. But he makes you into a vessel. you'll be filled with the Holy Spirit in heaven, but what kind of vessel are you going to be? You want to be a big vessel, a little tiny vessel? You'll be overflowing, but what kind of vessel will you be? So Jacob, remember Jacob wrestling with God in the desert? All night long they're wrestling. I mean, dude, being a Catholic is to be manly. Jacob's wrestling with God, and he's losing. And what does he do, Damon? You know the story? He hangs on to, it's the angel of the Lord in the Old Testament. It's called a theophany. It's actually Jesus, a pre-incarnate presence of the Lord. And he clings to this guy, fighting all night now in the desert, rolling around in the desert. And finally he says, Jacob says, I'm not going to let go of you until you bless me. When it hurts, just grab onto him. Just say, you can even cuss a little bit if you need to. This effing hurts, Lord. I know my dad, when he first experienced, really wanted to know the Lord, he finally said one day to him, God, I've been searching you for you my whole life. I give up. If you want me, come and get me. He got real. And God came and got him. God revealed himself to him. I'm just saying, get real with the Lord. This really hurts, God. I'm just going to cling to you until you bless me. And then what happened is God hit him in the hip, right? Hit him in the hip joint, so he limped from then on. And you learn as a Christian to walk with a little bit of hesitation. Lord, is this the way? But then you keep walking. And then God gave him a new name, the name of Israel. So this process that some of you are going through, we're all going through to some degree, and others, better way to say it, has its purpose. God's at work to do deep. You're not, God, if you could see what you look like to a demon or an angel, you'd be blown away. Because you're the temple of the Holy Spirit, dude. The angels would be tempted to bow down and worship because they see the presence of God in you so bright. And to demons, you're their terror. You're an incredible being in the universe. Half heaven, half earth. So it's time for us to make a decision to just lay everything down, throw down our shepherd's rod. You know the story about Elijah on Mount Carmel? Let's see if... I'm tired of picking on Damon. What's your other son's name? Is Matthew one of your sons too? Daniel, the prophet. Okay. So Daniel, you remember what happened with Elijah on Mount Carmel? Do you know that story? Where's Daniel? Okay. All right. I like that kid. Okay, so young man, I should say. So you know about Daniel on Mount Carmel? I've been there to Mount Carmel. Okay, so a lot like the world today, there's a lot of lukewarm Christians. You see them around the church a lot too. They're a bad advertisement for God. That's why God says, "If I wish you were hot or cold, but because you're lukewarm, and I'm, you know, like some of our politicians that are pro-abortion, I will spit you out of my mouth." In fact, it says projectile vomit you out. It's disgusting to be a lukewarm Christian. If you're going to be hot, then be on fire. If you're going to be cold, at least you're not a bad advertisement. People know you're not a Christian. So Elijah challenged the prophets of Baal to a battle on Mount Carmel. And these were the other religion that they were following. And he took them, all of the people of Israel together, and 900 priests and prophets of Baal, and said, "Hey, you call on fire and burn up this big pile of wood in this sacrifice. You call on your god Baal to send fire. And then I'll call on my god, and we'll see which god has all the power." Well, guess what? This is a big joke to these priests and prophets, because Baal is the god of fire. In fact, one of the things they did is they would throw their children into the fire to help discern what Baal's will was. And they went around all day long. They're trying to get the fire to fall, and it doesn't fall. And then finally, they start slashing. You know, this is really funny. Elijah comes up to him and goes, "Hey, where's your God, brah? Did he go to the bathroom?" It's a subtle way. In the Hebrew, it's more dramatic, and sometimes it's translated, "Did he go away?" He went aside to do his number two, I think is what it is. And that got him mad, so they started slashing their wrists, and still no fire fell. Can I take one extra minute? Okay, so then it's Elijah's turn. And you remember, there was a drought for 7 years. And he said, "Hey, bring some water over here." and he poured, they brought jars of water. Of course, there was no water, right? Because there was a drought, so all they could do was bring it from the sea. So it was salt water. It's like the tears of our lives that I've been talking about. And he poured all that onto that wood, and then he said, I know that you hear me, Lord, and fire fell. And so God is asking you, and it consumed, like the fire, the flaming sword consumed the wood, hay, and stubble of our lives. And all that's left, the only thing that's left when the fire comes is what's pure. You know, if you lost a beautiful red ruby in the middle of the fields out here, you would never be able to find it unless you burned out all the fields, and you would see that ruby glowing in the sun, in the black soot, the red ruby in the sunlight. That's sometimes why you feel like God's scorching you, so he can get rid of all that stuff and get you down to who you really are. And Matthew, the more that you give your life to the Lord, the more like Matthew you become. He doesn't make you something you don't want to be. He makes you the hero that you want to be. He makes you like you are meant to be. So the more you become totally surrendered to the Lord, the more comfortable you get with yourself, the more of who you are. So today I'm just saying, choose today who you will serve, like Elijah said. Are you going to choose yourself? Are you going to choose your pain? Are you going to choose your betrayal? You know the saying about the two wolves. I think it's a story about the two wolves. I forget exactly how it goes, but the essence is, which of these two wolves are going to win this fight they're in? And the sage says, the wolf you feed the most. What are you going to feed? Are you going to be on your championship diet? Who will you choose to serve today? It's obvious. Choose the champion of the universe. Lay down everything for him and just surrender your life to the Lord. So I'm just going to take one moment to just pray, okay? Especially the people there at home. Choose Jesus. Choose the champion. Oh, Jesus, we love you with all of our heart, soul, strength, and mind. Who have I in heaven but thee, O God? And there's nothing on this earth I desire beside thee. My flesh and my heart fail me, but you are the strength of my life and my portion forever. I give all of my hopes and dreams, all of my family, all of my worries, all my pain, all my cares, and I throw them down like Moses' hissing snake. And I ask you, Lord, to lift me up, to be the man of God that you have me to be. Amen. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Thanks, Matthew and Damon and Daniel.
Thank you, Bear. Well, we wanted to go right into the questions, and we have a handful here, so we'll go right into it. And then if there's any, after I read what I have here, if there's any comments you want to make, we can. I'll repeat it if you want to say it from where you're at.
Yeah, because God may want to say some brief things through all of us to make them brief. I guess what James is saying. But if you have something the Lord's told you, then share it.
All right. So, please explain in your own words what. For he who loses his life for my sake will find it. What type of self-death is this?
It's where it's so perfect. It's really what I've just been talking about. The whole thing is if you cling to yourself, you're going to lose yourself. Like I told Matthew, the more that you give yourself to the Lord, the more of who you are comes out. So, but you do that not by just an act of will. You do that by in times of prayer. You know, you start out every morning before the sun rises, right? That was the tradition. That time when the first light comes until the sun rises, you pray. And when the sun sets until it's dark, you pray. And you just say, Lord, not my will, but your will be done. And when you do that, you get to be more of who you are. You get to be more of what God made you to be.
Martyrdom seems like self-destruction of self and family. How do we live the little martyrdoms you mentioned as well as the bigger ones with wisdom?
Daniel, you want to answer that one? No, I'm kidding. So, Well, you know, there were those in the early church that would go to try to be martyred. They actually wanted to be martyred, which martyr, by the way, you know, means witness. And they say that those people that did that, that pursued martyrdom, had the worst deaths. Like, they were screaming and yelling. Whereas a real martyr, God gave them would give them grace. So I was talking to Michael earlier about this. You have to have the combination of prudence and fortitude. You have to know where your battles are. Choose your battles wisely. So there may be times when you could go out of your way to make things difficult for you or for your family. There's a captain I know is in my, by the way, I have something called Bear's Man Cave. Men join it by going to my website, and then we have Zoom video chats every 2 or 3 weeks, and we challenge and encourage each other through a secret Facebook group. But there, there's a man who I really admire, who is a captain in the police department, and there's a woman there that he really has a challenge with because she's definitely pro-gay rights and all of that, and he could choose to pick a fight with her, but it would bear no fruit to do that, and it would probably cost him some real problems. She doesn't pick a fight with him about it, but that would probably not be the most prudent thing to do. That wouldn't be a real martyrdom to pick a fight with someone you're not going to win. But there's another man I know, I have a great admiration for. He was asked, I think I said it earlier, he was asked to be on the Gay Pride Week, and he said no, and he knows that since that moment his career detoured. So you have to pray about it, have the gift of, ask God to show you. Because prudence is pursuing the true good in every situation, as is what love is. Love, Aquinas said, is willing the true good for the other, and you do that through self-donation. So these idiots that are obnoxious, you know, so-called, you know, preaching the gospel and proclaiming the truth, are not doing anything useful for the Lord and are only bringing harm to themselves, probably driving people away.
During the COVID crisis that we're all in, how do we fight back against governmental overreach in general as Catholic men, and especially to get our masses and our sacraments back?
I know for me, we started out by the Catholic Church is right next door. I do my Ocean Sunrise Catechism every morning, and we would go down there and put our hands on the front door and pray. I do the catechism, and then we'd pray a decade of the rosary. So it has to, all spiritual battles start in prayer, right? And they end there probably too. But by the way, you know, the Bible doesn't, you know, the Bible says, Jesus is a builder. He said, I will build my church. It's the only thing we know of that he actually built. And the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Well, you know, gates don't attack people, right? People attack gates. We're on the offensive. And so start with spiritual warfare, because the battle is first against principalities and powers in the air. Be prayed up. Go to confession. Receive the sacraments, and then you have to be proactive. What can I do? What we did is maybe not that big of a deal, but we were seen, and it was on Facebook, praying for the church to be open, and every Friday at noon we would meet in front of the courthouse. A lot of other Christians just started showing up too. So, and you need to talk to your priest and your bishop, but I think there's a time for disobedience. I don't know when that time is in every situation, but maybe other Christians can have a good Christian life going out on the water and praying, but we believe in the Eucharist and the sacraments. We can't do that without coming together. So I think it's time to be proactive. I said earlier, step into the breach, stand your ground, and then take the ground back. So I think you have to think about, how can I proactively do that?
Will we win the battle to establish a culture of life, or will the prince of this world overcome our beloved country?
Who just listened to that song, The Champion? You know, we just played that, right? The Champion. Come on, dude. That's a, you know, no matter what, Jesus, we know how the book ends. It may be what happens in this particular country in this particular time. I don't know, but I know the season, right? I don't know the exact time or moment or outcome, but I know the season. Our job isn't even to ask that question. It's to pray and do our, you know, do your job. Like as an athlete competing in competition, that team is really good. The swell direction is coming from here. No, now it's shifted from there. The tide is dropping. All I can do is do what I have control over. And that's my kuleana. In Hawaii, kuleana is like your stewardship, but it's stronger than that. It's like you own that. Like if you're working at a restaurant and your job is to take orders and someone else's job is to clear tables, if you were to clear a table for someone, you'd go, brah, that's my kuleana, brah. It's his ownership of his responsibility. And so you have to look at what is the kuleana God has given you and do that really, really well. But I think we also need to be proactive and see how God will use us in this time. It's not a time to be passive, that's for sure.
In regards to the prophet Nehemiah, what insight does he give us in regards to the journey, authority of St. Joseph in relation to our time as fathers?
Okay, who asked that? Who asked it? Are you here still? Is the person who wrote this still here? Oh, because I wanted to have them answer it. That's mean. Okay,
yeah, that is mean.
Give me, parse it out a little bit. What is it again?
So,
do you guys have any thoughts about this? Listen to it. Tell me what thoughts you have.
In regards to the prophet Nehemiah, what insight does he give us in regards to the journey, authority of St. Joseph in relation to our time as fathers?
Does anybody here have anything they'd like to say about that? Yeah, well, I think, you know, the prophet Nehemiah came back and he challenged the men. How have you let the wall fall down? They were there. It was the people that were there that he asked, or some of the people that were there and others that came with him to help rebuild the wall. And Joseph is just an example of a man who takes care of business. You know, he's, as we say, of kuleana. And you have authority. The way that wall was rebuilt was ohana by ohana, domestic church by domestic church. The holy family was a domestic church. And you have a domestic church. And you, as the head of that household, you can lead your family. I mean, I love Damon and all your sons. It's just so cool to see. You can lead your family, lead them by example. If your kids don't see you praying in the morning or they don't see you praying at night, they're not going to pray. Let them be surprised if they wake up early and see, oh, Dad's praying. He's in his prayer chair. They'll know right where you're going to be in the morning. They'll know that's where Dad goes to pray in the morning. Be an example to them.
On a lighter note, what is it like to be a Catholic motorcyclist in that culture?
So cool. How many of you here are members of Knights of Columbus? How many here are bikers? Oh, got one biker, one percenter back there. Well, you know, are you a member of Knights on Bikes? Knights on Bikes? You'll see them in my show. There's 5,000 Knights of Columbus members that are bikers, and they call them, it's part of Knights of Columbus. It's called Knights on Bikes. And, you know, the thing about bikers is there's you can learn a lot, because even the one percenters, there's a real brotherhood there. If you're riding along, because it's tough to be a biker. It's tough, and it takes a lot of alertness and skill and ready to face danger. If you see a brother on the side of the road, I mean, not that you even know, whose bike is broken out or something, you stop and you help him. So there's a real brotherhood there. So the waterman community as a surfer, the biker community is a tight group. When we ride as a pack, we all have our roles. You know, I have my sidekick is here navigating. I'm leading. I'm setting the speed. If I see something that's dangerous, I'll kick my heel at it to let people know. And everybody behind me kicks their heel at it to let them know there's a road hazard here. You know, and I give signals down here for my riders and up here for my pursuit vehicles when we're filming. Everybody has a role. The guy in the back of the pack is the tail gunner is really the most important, because he watches over the whole pack from behind. He knows if someone's, in one of our episodes, you see Daniel Markham kind of crash. Just as he gets woozy like this, and Grady rides up fast around the pack and says, "We got to pull over." And we pull over, and then Daniel, once we get him pulled over, he basically faints. So the tail gunner is important too. So everybody in the pack, who else here used to ride? I forget, was it Jeff? You, did you too? Oh, really? Okay. So, yeah, you know, tell them what it's like when you ride in a pack. Yeah. But how everybody watches out for each other. So I think that's a good example. But if you're a biker, join Knights on Bikes, dude. I'll get you in touch with Ace Bagley. He's one of our cast members.
How can we work to re-enthuse men in our parish?
What is the word enthuse? Who wrote that one? Stanley did.
No, I got a definition for enthuse.
So, enthusiasm, you know what the word means? It means in God, enthuse.
God and in God.
So enthusiasm, how can you get more men is I'll tell you what I would do. I would say, bro, you want to go out for breakfast?
Well, of course, my friends and fellows work on construction sites.
So you need to, but I mean, you might as well call it friendulization instead of evangelization. It's done by relationship. So I would say, let's go have some breakfast. Or I'd say, you want to come over? We're going to have, like, Sean Lynn, he's one of Jeff Caven's good buddies. He's a cop, biker cop up in Calgary. He has a barbecue ministry. You know, I tell my men, have a barbecue and have cigars and a shot of whiskey and be men and then let it go towards the Lord. Like I have these things at my web store, the Seven Virtue Cigar Sampler. And when you open up the sampler of seven different premium cigars, different blends, four of the blends are cardinal virtues and three of them are the theological virtues. And when you unpeel the label, which you have to do to enjoy it, it has a quote from my book. And it causes men to actually have a dialogue about that virtue instead of about politics or something else. So invite them over for a barbecue and have a shot of whiskey and a cigar and talk story with them and ask them what's going on in their lives. Get to know them. Because once you know them, once you take a real interest in them, they may open their heart to you and you may be able to share them. And have a couple brothers over. You know, hey, I got some friends you got to meet. You know, and you do it through friendulization. That's how you do it. You don't do it by telling them to go to a program someplace. Hey, I got a new evangelistic program for you to be part of. The That Man Is You program, the Exodus 90 program is all. Exodus 90 is very similar, right? I had a group. Those group of guys, we used to get together for breakfast every couple of weeks. We'd of course surf together too, and there's guys I'm meeting with on Wednesday. We always have cigar and whiskey about every month or two, and we just talk story. But it's we talk about everything, but it always gets centered around Jesus. So be a friend and really get curious about someone. You don't do it by some sort of program. You do it by a personal interest in someone.
I got a fellow who's on construction crew. Takes it to his wife's house. He and wife and I have breakfast together.
There you go. Saturday. There you go.
So what is the role of recreational adventure in our spiritual growth and maturing of a man?
Okay, so men, there's something about a man that he needs to be in a situation where his wits need to be about him. You know what I'm trying to say? Like if you're rappelling off a mountain or skydiving or hunting or hiking or surfing or something that tests your limit. You know, you always want to push your limits. The more you push your limits, the more room you have around you, right? Whether it's in my paddling life or in other areas. So you want to have a physical dimension to your life. I mean, God gave you, he likes the physical world. You know, he likes it. And he likes it so much he gave you a body. He likes it so much he took on a human body and soul. So you have to put yourself in a position where you feel you can experience the wildness. Maybe it's whitewater rafting. Maybe it's sailing. But something that isn't passive. I mean, actually, I think even rebuilding a Corvette, you know, because it brings your focus, it brings your intensity. But men, we need to, we've lost our way because in the last 60 to 100 years, we've been allowed to become soft if we want to. And I challenge my men, I've gained a lot of weight this year because of my cancer and all that, but it's all that's turning around for me now. But I challenge men to eat a low-carb regimen. If you're part of the man cave, you got to eat a low-carb, you got to eat a healthy eating regimen. You got to do resistance training, flexibility training, and cardio training. That's just part of being a man. I also suggest every man should know how to defend himself or at least defend his family. So you want to be trained in some sort of martial skill. I mean, I think that's a no-brainer, especially in the direction the world is coming. And people might think, well, I haven't got the time to do that. Maybe it isn't the right time for you to learn right now. But you should learn a martial skill of some sort. I know I'm not really good with guns, you know, but maybe some of you are. But you need to be able to defend your family. I don't mean to be aggressive or be an idiot, but men know how, you know, that painting of Father Don did where St. Joseph is doing this. Like, don't come any closer. You need to have that. And your family needs to know that you, to have the confidence in you. They probably already have the confidence in you that you would lay down your life for them, but they probably prefer you didn't die, you know? So I'm not, this is just my path, but I mean, all my children learned a martial skill to some degree. Find something, like when I go out, when Cindy and I go out spearfishing, you know, you can drown, right? When you're out surfing, you can drown. It's, but you put yourself a little bit in harm's way. You know, ride a horse. That's not, for me, that's really hard. She's a barrel rider, and I try to ride horses with her. But to me, the time before last, I got off a horse, I ended up laying flat on my back. So do something that stretches you. I always try to figure out a new challenge. This year, I'm going to get a deer tag, and I know a couple of guys that go hunting. Or this year, I'm going to go learn how to fly fish. This year, I'm going to hike. I'm going to do a certain mountain or something. But you got to be physical. It's got to be part of your life. And that sort of, I wouldn't call it, recreation means recreation, right? So when people come to Hawaii, I go, okay, look, we're going to go surf, or I'm going to take you spearfishing, or we're going to do something like that. And then I take them out to the edge of the reef, you know, the point, or I'll take them to the top of a cliff, and I'll say, okay, now just sit here, and here's a journal, and I want you to write a letter to yourself. And then maybe the next day I'll say, I want you to write a letter to God. And then maybe I'll say, now I want you to write a letter from God to you. What would God be saying to you? But recreation isn't about going out and just having fun. But you got to get your head out of the day-to-day. You know, the heart rests every third beat. So, but I don't just want to say recreation. I like the idea of the adventure part. So, like, I had a TV show, an adventure reality show that it was my concept called Clean Break. Maybe you saw it on Fox back in the day. And we took three young men to Hawaii, took them out of their element, and we threw them into all kinds of adventures. Those men are still my good friends. And the second season, I didn't like the guys because they chose, we need a handsome this and a guy like this and a guy like that. The first year, they chose real men, real characters that had flaws and had issues. But we took them and put them. See, the thing is when you reach your limit, when you reach the end of yourself, whether it's, do you know how far your fist reaches? Do you know? Do you know how far you can? I mean, do you know your limits? Do you know? You know, sailing. You know what? When you sail, a lot of people trail a rope behind their boat. Do you guys know about that? And it's got knots every 10 feet. Maybe it's a 100-foot long rope. Because I used to sail by myself, and if you fall out of the boat, you want to grab onto that rope. Well, you know what the last knot on that is called? The sailors from of old called it the bitter end. And that's kind of like, you need to come to that. When I pedaled my bicycle across the United States, I would come to the end of myself. And that's where I found God. You know, at the long, hot 95-mile day, I found God. Because I just tore down everything that wasn't God in me. So put yourself with prudence, put yourself in a situation that whether it's hiking or whatever it is, put yourself in a situation that pushes you farther than you can go. And you got to adapt for it. When I came out of my cancer treatment and went right back into doing all my sports, I ripped a muscle, right? I wasn't in shape enough. Now I'm doing more deliberate, then reattach my bicep, and I'm being more deliberate in my training. But do it, you guys. Do something physical, especially fathers with their sons, you know. Do something physical. All of my sons, I got to test two of my sons for their black belts, which is pretty cool. So do something, like I learned to fly with my son, Joshua, you know, because he always wanted to be a pilot. That's dangerous. That's kind of that, you have to, your wits have to be about you, right? It's a little bit dangerous. It's a lot dangerous, actually. But when you're surfer riding a big wave, or you're landing a plane for the first time, you're not thinking about your bills or your worries. You're totally alive in the moment. And remember, God said, I am who am, right? He's not, he said, I am before, when they said, I'm greater than Abraham. Why? Because before Abraham was, I am. Not I was, I am. So to really find that intimacy that with God, you got to get to that still point of just saying, living in the moment. So when you jump out of an airplane for the first time, or every time, you're not thinking about anything else. You know, you're thinking about that moment. And when you land, you feel like you can conquer the world. So I'm not saying to have a death. You know, people who ride big waves in Hawaii, my good friends, people ask me, are you a big wave rider? Yeah, I've ridden big waves, but I don't have that mentality of the crazy big wave riders. They're just my friends and they drag me along. But do they have a death wish? No, they have a life wish. Those guys train and train and train and train. And they living, you know, one of the things I'm going to miss in heaven is there going to be any danger, Lord? I hope there's some kind of danger. You know, riding a big wave, part of it is like, you really got to be, there's, you know, the champion part of you. I'm sure something, there's going to be challenges in heaven of some sort that continues to draw out that championship. Who knows what else God has in store? What other creatures he's going to create or universes he's going to create? Maybe you have a role in some way in God's future plans. We have to become champions. And so, I mean, I know I'm probably stressing this too much, but I can't stress enough, get physical. Get out in the wild. Learn how to scuba dive. You know, do something that takes you outside and recreate. And then when you're in that step, after the still point, write a letter to yourself. Explain yourself to yourself. It's like when you find out who you are in adversity. That's who you find out really who you are. When you totally lose yourself, you find yourself. When you come to the end of yourself, you can hear the still small voice of God. That's where you hear it. So go to the edge, right? It's on the edge of the ocean or the edge of a cliff. Push yourself to the edge and experience that still point, being one with the Lord like that, and let God communicate to you.